the push to renew Arlington. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, lots of local political news to discuss. We'll get into it with Jacksonville City Councilwoman Joyce Morgan. And your calls. The number to join us is 549-2937. Then later, the First Coast is becoming the Tech Coast. A closer look. That and more just ahead. But first this hour, there are new calls for a federal probe into Jacksonville City Hall. The question is, will members of the Jacksonville City Council join their colleague Garrett Dennis in asking for the U.S. attorney to investigate the actions of Mayor Lenny Curry's office over allegations of potential procurement fraud? At the same time, the City Council is dealing with another controversial matter, whether to approve a tax referendum for schools. Here with her thoughts on that and lots of happenings in her own district, the Arlington neighborhood, we welcome Jacksonville City Councilwoman Joyce Morgan to Studio 5. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Great to be here today.
Great to have you on the show. What are your questions for Joyce Morgan? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets, already getting them. Send them to Melissa in Jax. And our Facebook page is open. All right, lots to talk about, including what's happening in your district, but I want to begin by asking you your reaction to your colleague Garrett Dennis's letter to the U.S. Attorney for the Middle District of Florida. He's calling for a federal investigation into potential procurement fraud at Mayor Lenny Curry's office. What's your response to that?
I'm really not surprised. Really not surprised, Melissa. As you see, things have been shaping up rather interestingly in the last week or so when it comes to procurement. The whole situation with KHA.
The Kids Hope Alliance.
Kids Hope Alliance, executive director. I think that just set off a whirlwind of different things that are now coming to this. You know, certainly the inspector general that is investigating is one thing, but now this just takes it to a different level. And then all of the text messages, all of that, I think opened up a Pandora's box.
And so do you support further investigation or not?
Well, I think that further investigation is not a bad thing. It's really not a bad thing. And and I think that sometimes when you investigate it, it helps to clear the air. And for our public, I think that that's very important, to clear the air. Any misconception, any perception of wrongdoing, it needs to be stomped out.
It's 549-2937 to join us. And for those who haven't been following this, there is an inspector general's investigation into the now on leave head of the Kids Hope Alliance, Joe Peppers. This has to do with, according to the city, alleged misconduct by Mr. Peppers. However, a document recently emerged, a memo Peppers wrote, alleging that top staffers of the mayor, Brian Hughes and Sam Musa, pressured him to improperly steer crime prevention grants to certain powerful entities and churches in Jacksonville. Text messages have emerged between Peppers and Hughes that show some of these conversations taking place. So that's what you were referring to there. As someone like all of your colleagues on the city council who's concerned about crime prevention, what are your thoughts about the way these grants were allegedly processed? And also, what's your reaction to some who've noted this is how it's been in Jacksonville for a long time?
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. This is the way it's been in Jacksonville for a long time. I guess that's what we call the good old boys network. And I'm sure that that's what people are certainly referring to. I think when I decided to become a city council member, I was always under the impression that I would not be part of that good old boys network. I guess I don't fit. You know,
you're not a boy. For one thing.
Yeah, no, definitely. So I probably don't fit into that network and probably never will fit into that network. But it was certainly something that I wanted to make sure that what we're doing in the city is the right thing for the constituents. So when I look at stuff like that, it's very, very troubling to me. It's very concerning to me. And so I'm always looking for a way to make sure that we are respectful to the administration. The administration is respectful to us, but I certainly cannot condone any shenanigans going on. Now, when we started this whole thing, I was on the finance committee. And so when we even started this notion of the mini grants, that was very exciting to me because as a council member, I had always said that money was not going to some of the smaller entities who were out on the street doing the work anyway. They were always doing it. A lot of them never even asked for money. So I was very excited that we were going to have this money, small amounts of money to give to all of these entities. And so to hear that this is going on and this was going on and possibly going on, and those are the allegations that we're looking at. Again, Melissa, that's troubling to me. That's very disturbing to me because I know that some of these groups needed this money. I know the work that they're doing, and I appreciate the work that they have been doing.
And can a $10,000 grant really be effective at bringing down crime rates? Critics have seen some of these mini grants as more political patronage being doled out to favored groups, and that this isn't a new thing for the city. They've also alleged that perhaps the mayor's office was doling out these grants to quiet down potential critics of the mayor from African-American and Democratic-leaning groups leading up to his reelection. What's your response to that allegation?
Again, how can I answer that with full knowledge that I'm answering you truthfully when I don't know? For sure. For sure. I can allege all day, but I don't know that for sure. Does it have the appearance that it could have been that way now that we're looking and we're doing our armchair, you know, quarterbacking, so to speak? It does look like it could have been like that. But how can I say that? I really can't. And I'm not one to just jump out, Melissa, and just say that this is how it is. As a reporter, I mean, this is what we do. I need both sides of the story.
Do you still think of yourself as a reporter? People remember you from your days as an anchor at Channel 4.
Do you apply that to
your work now on the city council?
I absolutely do. And that's why sometimes I may not speak out so boldly against something or for something is because I don't have all of the information and I am simply not willing to just say it.
Let's ask you about another matter that has really dominated headlines recently. The Jacksonville City Council is deliberating whether to put a half-cent sales tax referendum for schools on the ballot this year or next year, potentially. The Duval County School Board has retained its own legal counsel. They're at odds with the city's Office of General Counsel. Mm-hmm. There does not appear to be a majority of votes on the city council to put this on the ballot this year. Where do you stand?
Well, I'm sorry that there aren't enough votes that we can see and that we can count for this. I think that we should put it on this year. And this has been one of those things that's hanging over city council's head. Today, it's being taken up as we speak. And so, needless to say, I'll be running from here. So I can
get to
the finance committee. It will start at 9:30, and that is one of the bills that they will take up. As a rules chair, at 2 p.m. this afternoon, we will also take it up. So these are the two committees that this bill is in, 2019-380. These are the two committees that it's in. And so, as you know, we did have a joint meeting with the school board members. And I thought it went well. There were many people who said they didn't think it went well at all because city council members were still asking some of the same questions that they had asked in writing, and we had received those answers. And some city council members were not pleased with the answers. But, you know, one of the things that I said to my colleagues is we don't have to be pleased with the answers. The answers are the answers, and these are the facts.
One more question before we go to callers. Tell us about the latest on Renew Arlington. That's an initiative to revitalize a neighborhood in near downtown Jacksonville that used to be one of the most desirable zip codes in town.
Yes.
In recent years, it's fallen off. There's been a push by you, the president of JU, Tim Cost, and many others to bring Arlington back. How is that going? What's the latest?
It's going very well, Melissa. Thank you for asking. It's called the Renew Arlington CRA, Community Redevelopment Area. And since 2015, basically since the time that I came into office, we've been on this initiative. We just passed in City Council what's called a zoning overlay, which pretty much sets standards for fencing, for landscaping, and for signage down the corridors, which include Merrill Road, University Boulevard, and just a short part of Arlington Road. We're in the process of working on a facade grant for those business owners who will be impacted in that area. So
and
that's going on.
And haven't some of them expressed opposition to it?
Yes, of course. Some of them have expressed opposition. Some of them would like the Renew Arlington CRA to pay everything for their signage, for their landscaping, and for their fences. But that has to be decided by the CRA agency board, which is basically the 19 council members. So we're still in the middle of that, but we do know that Town and Country was sold. And that's a major part of our redevelopment, because that is the gateway to District 1, to Arlington.
Okay, lots of calls for Joyce Morgan. What are your questions and comments about all of these issues? So much happening right now. It's 549-2937. Patrick is at the beaches. Hi, Patrick. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, Councilmember Morgan.
Good morning.
So I was just calling to remind Councilmember Morgan, I'm sure she remembers, and to remind the listeners that in 2018, ULI North Florida, along with Jacksonville University, the Community Foundation of Florida, and Renew Arlington, and several stakeholders in the area conducted a technical assistance panel. We brought in some experts from all around the country to take a look at the Arlington neighborhood and some of the things the Arlington neighborhood is facing, and generated a report that has some recommendations. Some of those recommendations are being implemented, and we knew it was going to take a little bit of time, but I think it's encouraging that we're seeing some of the first steps. And I just wanted to put out there that if ULI North Florida can be of any further assistance to Councilmember Morgan's efforts or the community's efforts, we would love to continue to be involved in helping this neighborhood improve and grow and deal with some of the obstacles that they're facing.
And thank you so much. We appreciate it. And we just appreciated you guys coming in and talking to us and really analyzing what was going on in our neighborhood. And I think you guys hit the nail on the head. And so you are right. We are starting to do some of those very things in the neighborhood. And we even have a Wawa that's coming at the corner of Arlington Road.
That's sort of a bellwether, isn't it? That's like a Starbucks coming, isn't it? That's a sign of something.
Yeah,
you know,
so
when you study urban policy, Arlington is what's known as an inner ring neighborhood or suburb, like so many others in cities all over the country, which had a glory era and then a decline, and is now in the midst of neighborhood activists, politicians, business leaders, academics, all of you working together to try to bring it back, because there's a lot of good housing stock there. There's good infrastructure. It's close to downtown. It has a lot of natural attributes. If you can overcome the factors that have led to the decline over the years.
And when you think about it, Melissa, a lot of the factors that have led to the decline are simply aging. It's aging. And as not only as we age, but as a community ages, things have to change and people have to be ready for that change. And I just believe Arlington is poised and ready for that change.
John in San Marco. Hi, John. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. And thank you, Melissa, for your show. And Councilmember Morgan, thank you for your work. My question is about the Human Rights Commission. I believe Dr. Charlene Taylor Hill, which is a jewel of Jacksonville for many years, has retired. And what happens as far as that appointment? And then secondly, what are some ideas we can use during this time to talk about human rights in Jacksonville, equality, value, how each person is a contribution to our city?
Thanks for that question.
Thanks, John.
I will tell you that the Human Rights Commission is alive and well. A new person has been appointed to that position.
And who is that?
I her name escapes me, but I will tell you, I just saw her yesterday morning in the garage. Wendy.
We'll look it up.
Yes.
But yes, someone's on the job.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's Wendy Benlos or something like that. But I think she's going to do a great job. She's well informed. She knows what's going on. And I believe we're going to be okay. I think that's definitely one of those boards and commissions that you just have to stay on top of. You just have to make sure that you're paying attention. And it's what everyone talks about, Melissa. Stay woke. Just stay woke.
You know, I have to say, that's a term that not all of your colleagues on the city council would agree with. There are real political divisions on that body, and you're in the minority on that body. What about that? How do you navigate that?
How do I navigate it? I navigate it the way I've navigated life. I think you have to be respectful. Number one, you have to be respectful. You have to be thoughtful, and you have to continuously do your homework and stay abreast and stay focused.
It's 549-2937 as we speak with Councilmember Joyce Morgan. Denise on the north side. Hi, Denise. Good morning. Thanks for holding. You're on
the
air.
Good morning. How are you doing? I had a question for Councilwoman Joyce Morgan concerning the micro grants at that was suggested by Brian Hughes for Bethel Baptist Church. I would like to know what is her position on that, and does she have a relationship with Bethel Baptist Church?
Okay.
Good morning, Denise. Of course, you know I go to Bethel Baptist Institutional Church. I've been there for 26 years. Absolutely. Now, as far as those grants are concerned, you have to understand that I didn't have anything to do with the grants. I didn't even know that Bethel had applied for the grant until
I was told. Well, they ended up not getting a grant, right? Isn't that the outcome?
That's what our pastor said. And when I looked on the list, I didn't see their name. I did not see Bethel's name on the list.
What are you, going back to the caller's question, what's your reaction to the perception, at least, that certain powerful churches like Bethel, of which you're a member, are often, certain individuals or players are putting their thumb on the scale to ensure that a player like Bethel gets that money? And in return, perhaps an entity like Bethel helps a candidate running for mayor or another candidate or another cause, that the politics is transactional that way.
Well, I think one of the things I would have to say is that even at Bethel, our pastors are very careful when it comes to politics about what they say, because, as you know, there's still a separation of church and state. So.
Sure. I mean, they may not proselytize about politics from the pulpit,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't mean that maybe things aren't said in private meetings.
Right.
What about that perception?
And perception to a viewer or perception to our constituents, I always say perception is pretty much real. And it's whatever that person perceives is their reality. And so if there are people in the church that perceive that, then that is absolutely their reality. Again, for me, I think it was interesting that as long as I've been to the church, as long as I've known our pastors, when it came to that kind of stuff, even I try to stay away from them with certain things. And, you know, and that's why. That's exactly why, Melissa. That's exactly why. Because when you think about it, over my time here in Jacksonville, I know so many people, and those grants were going out to so many people. As a statement, whether it's at one of my town hall meetings or just when I'm meeting with people, I will tell everybody to apply. Carte blanche, apply.
Well, and to be clear, city council members such as yourself were not in charge of the procurement process.
Absolutely, we were not.
That said, we're getting comments on our Facebook page as well, asking you to comment on the perception that City Hall and that the political culture of this city is corrupt, whether it has to do with Bethel getting a micro, as the text message infamously said,
yes,
or other issues, other scandals.
Well, there have been quite a few, as we know. And as I've always said, because what I do, sometimes as a city council member, one of the things that I was always trying to do was trying to do my work in District 1. That was just my focus. So, holding my head down, doing my work, staying focused on that, which meant that a lot of times I probably missed some of the things that were going on. Mm-hmm. I might have missed some of the things that were happening behind closed doors because I wasn't focused on that. But right. Now
you're focused.
Now I'm focused.
Here's an email from a listener. Is Councilmember Morgan aware that the mayor, Mayor Curry, was allowed to be introduced to members of the Bethel Baptist Church going along to feed this narrative that perhaps City Hall wanted Bethel to get a micro grant in return for Bethel directing its powerful flock, lots of parishioners there, to support the mayor?
Yes, I was aware of that. In fact, it was during a big event at Bethel, and the mayor was there. There were a lot of city council members there. I was there.
Is that inappropriate?
Even Anna Brochet was there. I mean, there were just a lot of people there. One of the things about Bethel is, as you know, Bethel is one of those churches that's been around for a very, very long time, more than 150 years, I think 180 some odd years, if I'm not mistaken. So it's well entrenched into the entire Jacksonville scene, be it political, be it anything. If you're a candidate, everybody wants to say hello to Bethel. I will tell you that saying that, in District 1, I probably visited every one of my churches.
Mm-hmm. And so the question becomes, when does politicking at the pulpit, when is it appropriate? When are politicians and political influencers crossing the line? I think that's the question that's being asked right now.
That is a good question. And so a lot of times, and the pastors in my district will tell you, a lot of times I go unannounced. And I go unannounced for that very reason, because that way I'm allowed to worship without it being political. Do you understand what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. and so I get what your listeners are saying, because it's absolutely true that there is such a fine line. There is such a fine line. And if I go to a church, is it viewed as I'm there for politics, or can I just come in? Can I just come in? I don't know.
Right. Lots of tweets coming into the show. Arlington Council tweets us, Joyce Morgan's regular town halls have been instrumental in communicating with all of us. We thank her for joining in the efforts to renew Arlington. Jimmy tweets the show, it's early for announcements, but many in town appreciate the way Councilmember Morgan exerts thoughtful leadership. Would she consider further elected office when her term ends in 2023? I'll ask you the same question I've asked other members of City Council that have appeared on this show recently, and we have more coming, more booked. Are you considering a run for higher office yourself after your term ends on the council, mayor or another office?
Melissa, at this time, I am not. Does that mean the door won't open up later? I don't know. But right now, no.
All right. Lots of calls. Meanwhile, let's go to Willie in Murray Hill. Hi, Willie. Good morning.
Good morning, ladies. From a perception point of view, dealing with this Bethel thing, this looks like from a perception that it's like Pastor has, it's like a sellout. Like you got a predominantly African-American congregation, and then it looks like you're kind of chumming with a Republican mayor, and then you look at the condition of the African-American community on the west side or the east side or the north side, and then you go, it's feel like you're being, you know, you played, as we say on the street, like you're just being pimped or something. So just a perception.
Thanks. Have a good day. Thanks, Willie. Yeah, I think that goes back to what we were discussing a moment ago. The perception that politically connected pastors are getting payoffs without any real improvement to struggling communities.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing it speaks of is we always have to remember that, Melissa, we have friends, and people may not agree with our friends, but we all have friends. I have lots of Republican friends. I have lots of Democratic friends. I have lots of friends. And so if my friend doesn't look like me and my friend does not have the same political allies as me, does that mean that's not my friend and that I should not befriend you?
Right. But I think that's different than what he's alleging, which is that there are the belief, the perception anyway, that there are pastors in this community who hide behind the Bible. They profess to want to be supporting and uplifting struggling communities while they're taking its alleged payoffs from the city or others and pocketing that money without really doing much to help the communities they claim to serve. What about that?
Yeah, that's still an allegation. I mean, that's still a big allegation. And what I liked about what Willie said is he said that that is the perception. And that's a perception that each one of us will have to process because, you know, as a whole, I can't say that. Of course I can't say that. I mean, that would be just for me saying that every pastor that I know, oh, yeah, you know, this is how they do it. That's just too across the board to say. But I do agree that, again, perception is real to the person who this is happening to.
All right, let's take one more call. We're talking about allegations of corruption at City Hall and also the push to renew Arlington with Councilmember Joyce Morgan. Conrad is in Old Arlington. Hey, Conrad. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Melissa. Great interview here with Ms. Morgan. I'm a 35-year business owner, slightly outside the CRA in old Arlington behind the school and Town and Country Shopping Center. I personally feel like I'm blessed by being outside the CRA because of the harassment that the business owners feel like they get every time we go through one of these things. There's been three of them since I've been in business over here. But my big question here was the food desert is never mentioned when you talk about the food deserts in the northwest side of town and so on. Between Atlantic Boulevard and Fort Caroline Road, there is one Save-A-Lot on Merrill Road. There are no grocery stores for 4 miles, and there were eight. Seven were at Town and Country Shopping Center in my lifetime, plus the food line that was at Arlington Plaza. In the CRA, are they going to at least try and bring a decent and preferably late-night grocery source to the people of Arlington? I mean, there's a lot of people over here that are residential still, and always have been, and you have to either drive or walk or be denied access to food after 9 or 10 o'clock at night in this entire area. And as a business owner, I have been made aware of this by some problems where I've had to do some walking lately, and I've gotten another neighborhood much better again. But I just wanted to input that. And I want to thank Ms. Morgan for working with the friend of the people who just left office after 18 and a half years, who used to be the councilman over here, Mr. Cresson Benny. I thought she did an excellent job of, from what I saw of it, of the way she was able to work with him. He was, to me, he was a man of the people if we've ever had one.
Thanks, Conrad. Okay, thank you for all of that. By the way, here's a tweet from Brian. Please share what everyone can do to support efforts to renew Arlington.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Conrad, and thank you, Brian. First of all, Conrad, yes, we understand that it is a food desert. And in fact, yesterday at our neighborhoods meeting, we were talking about food deserts and what we do. And now that Town and Country has been purchased, one of the things that I saw for that area, being in the CRA or not even in the CRA, it doesn't matter, is that we needed another grocery store. Pick and Save was gone. Everything was gone from up there. Winn-Dixie was gone. So as we redeveloped that area, I thought we needed mixed use development. And that's something that would be just perfect for that area, crossing the bridge and coming into Arlington and having a smaller grocery store. We don't need a large grocery store right there, but we do need something there. As far as the food deserts, we know that we have a food desert. We have lots of food giveaways in that area. We have lots of food giveaways down Atlantic Boulevard in Woodland Acres. We have lots of food giveaways over at Regency Square Mall, all because of that. When we talk about what we can do in this area, one of the things that's going to bring people back into this area and bring people looking to develop in this area is simply cleaning up. We know that Public Works simply cannot clean up 843 square miles of Jacksonville and do it in a timely fashion. I fight that all the time, late garbage pickups. But we have new people adopting roads in District 1. We need to adopt more roads. We need to get out and do something for ourselves. We need to make sure that we're training our young people and children that picking up and cleaning up behind yourself is just what we need to do. So there's a lot of work for all of us in District 1. And my next town hall meeting is next Monday, August 26th at 6 p.m. It'll be at Fort Caroline Presbyterian Church, which is on University Club Boulevard. So I invite everyone in District 1 to be there.
There you go. For the person that asked how to support Arlington, you can start at that meeting. So we thank you for all of your thoughts. So much to go over. Thanks for giving us some time.
Absolutely, Melissa. Thank you so much. And thanks to all your listeners.
She's Jacksonville City Councilmember Joyce Morgan of District 1. And up next, why the First Coast is becoming the Tech Coast. We'll be right back.
WGCT's podcast, What It's Like, tells the stories of local people.
I delivered a stillborn baby. The doctors always let you hold them, let you see them, and then they take them away and you never see them again.
Did you feel illegal?
You know, this word is tossed around so loosely.
I did. I kind of felt shame sometimes.
Take a listen to What It's Like wherever you get your podcasts.
Join WJCT for a private member reception and screening of the new Downton Abbey movie on Thursday, September 19th at the Cinemark Tinseltown. 6 p.m. reception and 7 p.m. screening. $50 donation. Costumes are encouraged. For more information, go to wjct.org/events.
Welcome back. Well, Northeast Florida is known as the First Coast, but increasingly business leaders are working to position this area as the Tech Coast, too. Yeah, the Jax Chambers Tech Coast Conference is coming up tomorrow at TIAA Bank Field. We've got a preview right now with Wendy Norfleet. She's the Jax Chamber IT Council President. Hey, Wendy, good morning.
Hey, Melissa.
Okay, so Tech Coast is coming up tomorrow at East Club at the bank, the sixth annual. What's on the agenda?
Well, we're going to be at the TIAA Bank Field, and on the agenda is everything technology. We're going to cover all industries. We're going to take a look at how we're using artificial intelligence. A lot of people don't know we've been using it for quite a while. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about banking in technology with STEM. We're going to be talking about how we're going to become a smart city. So we have.
Let's begin with that.
Okay.
This is really interesting stuff. Smart cities. This is a collaboration between JTA, the Jacksonville Transportation Authority, and the North Florida TPO, Transportation Planning Organization. Full disclosure, they're a sponsor of this program. They're discussing efforts to make the Bay Street corridor a smart city. Can you explain what that means?
Yes. So I don't know if you've had a chance to take a look at the preview of it, but it's autonomous vehicles. It is the crosswalks where they sense you and the lights come on. So it will become very pedestrian friendly. And so we're trying it out. There's a lot of smaller cities that are already have this out there. And so we want to be known as a smart city.
And that's just one of the things on the agenda tomorrow. You're also talking about how to get more women into STEM.
Yes, that is still an ongoing process. There's a lot of tech companies that are really putting a concerted effort in building that diversity.
Why is that such a focus for business? Why do you think it's so important to get more women into STEM fields? Obviously, it's because the salaries are higher. That's the first reason.
Salaries are higher, but women, we think and we manage a lot differently. And so therefore, I think that we bring a more humane side to the technology field. And we also, come on, face it, women can multitask a lot better. Mm-hmm. And we can juggle a lot of things at one time.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, Wendy. Okay, let's talk about artificial intelligence, too, because that's also coming up at the Tech Coast Conference. Looking at how AI is changing business.
Yes, we're going to have two different sessions on that. One is going to focus on how it's being used in the medical industry.
How is it being used in the medical industry?
Well, a couple of different ways. We have one company that's specializing in how to do debt reduction. And it's really interesting because if you think about a debt collector, you can't go after somebody who is sick or maybe possibly had a family member that died the same way you can that people just don't want to pay their bills. And so they're building this into their debt collection process. And so it's a really cool process. You have to see it. I know I'm a techie, so I get really excited about it, but it is a really cool process.
So that's one.
That's one.
And also then, manufacturing.
Right. And manufacturing has been around a while, but they're making it more, I guess, human form. And so they can do a lot more. So they don't just go straight and turn. They can actually bend and put things together. Of course, we have a human that quality checks it, but all the pre-work can be done in advance.
What do you say as a business leader to those who are, they're following the amazing leaps in technology and how it's automating so much of business, but at the same time, there are worries that artificial intelligence, robotics, the technological advancements we're seeing are going to automate lots of people out of jobs. And how does the business community address that?
It's going to change the job market. Okay, so as you can see that we have a lot more technology jobs available than we did 10 years ago. And so while some jobs have gone out of existence, we have a lot more that were created because of these advanced technologies. And so it's a difference. It's not that there won't be jobs. It's just you have to have a different skill set. And most of them will require mm-hmm. some form of technology.
Yeah. And how do companies work on that? Because if you don't have the right training, the right background, the digital divide, the tech divide will be real for millions of people.
Right. And a lot of companies are actually doing professional development with their employees. And luckily, there's a lot, we have a lot of higher institutions here that specialize in certification programs, certificate programs, and degrees. And so there's a lot of opportunity to go ahead and get that your skills, you know, developed.
Speaking of that, you're handing out some scholarships at this event to local students who are majoring in tech fields, right?
Yes, that's the whole purpose of the conference, is to give scholarships, give back. And so we will be awarding two scholarships, one to a UNF student and one to an FSCJ student.
That's exciting. And the academics play such a vital role in this, in grooming and educating these new tech whizzes that are going to be leading business in this area for years to come. What are your thoughts about the growth of tech companies in this area, this push to make us almost a mini Silicon Valley? I've heard a little bit of discussion about that over the last few years.
It's definitely true. Even in planning this year's conference, we've had several companies from overseas reach out to us. They will be at the conference checking out Jacksonville for a possible relocation.
Oh, really? Can you share who they are?
I can't share the names. One is from New Zealand.
Really?
Yes. And one is from Scotland. And so, they will both be here.
And they're coming. So why are they checking out Jacksonville? What about Jacksonville attracted them?
They wanted to be warm, somewhere in a warmer climate. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing. They've kind of been watching the news and have seen Jacksonville rise up. And they see this conference as a perfect way to kind of get immersed in the technology in Jacksonville, meet people, and see if this is a viable option.
So you'll be putting on the hard sell, putting your best foot forward.
We'll definitely be putting the best foot forward.
How many jobs are we talking about?
One company is smaller, so I wouldn't expect to be about 20. But then, of course, at that high level, then, of course, other jobs will follow. The New Zealand company, I'm not really sure how big they are, but they must be fairly big to relocate.
That gives you a sense of the chamber's work in trying to woo businesses to this community and the importance of the tech space. The more you can emphasize that, the better, I'm sure, to attract more jobs.
Right. And they're going to be looking at this conference as a way, what's attracted, you know, if they decide to come here and look at technology, what will they possibly see?
Okay, so with all of that said, this conference is coming up tomorrow at TIAA Bank Field. Josh Scobie is handling opening remarks, so a little Jaguars flair.
That's right.
That's exciting. And we are
giving away tickets throughout the conference.
Too late to register? Can people still attend?
They can still register up until close of business today.
JacksChamber.com.
No, TechCoastConference.com.
TechCoastConference.com. Excuse me. I get my websites mixed up from time to time. So go to TechCoastConference.com. Register now for the Jacks Chamber 6th Annual Tech Coast Conference. It's tomorrow at TIAA Bank Field. And she is Wendy Norfleet, the Chamber's IT Council President. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
Okay, in a moment, how you can tuk-tuk your way all around town. What's a tuk-tuk? We will have the answer next.
Imagine you're in a place where you don't know the language, but you've got an earbud that translates for you in real time.
As the information is being processed and captured via your earphones and earbuds, that data signal is being sent through your smartphone to the cloud, where it's processed and then relays back through the smartphone to the cloud.
I'm Kai Rizdal, the complicated tech of translation, next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6 here on 89.9 WJCT.
The corn is as high as an elephant's.
I'm Tanya Mosley. It's the height of corn season. So let's lend an ear to resident chef Kathy Gunst, who says, don't throw away the cobs. She has some delicious dishes made with corn, and she'll share them with us. That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 2 here on 89.9 WJCT. I got a
beautiful feeling. On the next Fresh Air, debunking the intellectual underpinnings of racism, sexism, and homophobia. Writer Charles King says 100 years ago, nearly every educated person believed in a natural order of human potential, which put white men at the top. His book is about a generation of anthropologists who traveled the world and brought new perspectives on our differences. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
How would you change the primary election process? This summer, presidential candidates are taking advantage of good weather and a skewed system to campaign in Iowa and New Hampshire. We'll bring you some voices from the Iowa State Fair and hear more from those calling for a more level playing field. Next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, it is a brand new way to get around the city. Just hop on a tuk-tuk. What the heck is a tuk-tuk, you say? Here's the answer right now as we welcome Steph Dale. She's the Chief Tuck-In Officer at Go Tuck-In Inc. Hi, Steph. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So good to have you on the show. You are the first person to bring this incredible new mode of transportation to Florida. It's called a tuk-tuk. Yes. Popular overseas. What is a tuk-tuk? People might have seen these around town, so you can explain right. what they're seeing.
Yeah, so ours are a luxury three-wheel vehicle that are environmentally friendly. So that's why all of my colors are green mm-hmm. and white. And basically, it comes from the Amsterdam tuk-tuk factory originally, but ours are manufactured right here in the United States as well.
These are electric vehicles, so no fossil fuel emissions. They're street legal. They're safe to ride on. They're open air.
Yeah.
And you hop on a tuk-tuk and you get a tour of a neighborhood of Jacksonville. You have tours in all different sectors of town, right?
Right. Yeah. So we're out at the beach and then we cover the whole urban core. And so it's not just a typical battery. It's a commercial grade battery. And that's important because those never go into the landfills.
So, why is it called a tuk-tuk?
Yeah, so it's interesting.
What does that mean?
You know, I'm sure that there must be, you know, many, many years ago, there must have been somebody. But over in Europe, you'll hear them pronounce it a tuk-tuk. Uh-huh. And so I was like, there's no way that people are going to get that one. So that's the whole reason why we say it's a tuk-tuk. And of course, the company, the Go Tuck-In, because I want people to go on these great vehicles.
Now, if you take the brewery tour, you buy the first drink for folks and you tour them to... some of the most popular microbreweries in town. So it's like a pub crawl almost, right?
So in our case, we go to both breweries and more. And so if somebody says, hey, I want to only do one brewery, but I want other, you know, types of beverages, we can accommodate them. And it's 100% customizable.
Nice.
It's awesome.
So you can go with your friends and you can make a night out of it with your friends. Yeah. Everybody piles in and goes tucking around mm-hmm. the neighborhood.
Yeah. And we even have a brewery scavenger hunt that makes it an even better challenge, if you will. Lots of fun activities and, of course, great picture opportunities as well.
That's fun. Now, I would think this is great for tourists visiting the area, but also even if you've lived here a long time, you're going to learn something about the neighborhood when you take the tuk-tuk tour, correct?
Yeah, it's amazing. We get a lot of people that have been here 20, 30 years. And if they take any one of our five historical and architectural tours, they're like going, oh my gosh, I never knew we had such a diversity of architecture and the amazing history that we actually do here have in town.
It looks like you have kids tours, too.
We do. We have great kids scavenger hunts.
It's a fun birthday party for kids.
It's a blast. They love it. And we've even taken folks with disabilities out for just a ride. And it's an experience. It's an amazing vehicle. And so they love it.
Now, I'm looking at the website. If you want to check it out, it's easy to find. Just go to the website, gotuckin.com. That's spelled GOTUKN.com. You can take a tuk-tuk tour at the beaches, downtown or in Riverside Avondale, and
right.
All popular places to enjoy something like this. And by the way, our little team here at WJCT is about to take a tuk-tuk tour. We will videotape this for posterity and put it on our website. We're really excited about doing it too.
Yeah, we can customize anything. So we have a whole private event section where we have that opportunity to work with you to really, you dream it, we can tuck and make it happen.
And I would think the tourism folks love this too. This is helping grow tourism for Jacksonville.
It really is. It gives us a much different opportunity. We pick up at all the different hotels, both down here and also out at the beach as well. So it makes, you know, the mode of transportation for our visitors a whole lot easier as well.
So cool. It's a tuk-tuk. Take a tuk-tuk tour, either a brewery tour or a sightseeing tour, in locations all across Jacksonville. It's gotuckin.com for more. Steph Dale is the chief tuckin officer, she says, for Go Tuckin Inc. Congratulations. This is exciting to see
Thank
happening.
You.
I can't wait to hop on one myself, Steph.
Yeah, we can't wait to have you.
It'll be soon. All right, and thanks so much. That's our show. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. We want your feedback. Send emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tomorrow, we speak with Jacksonville Congressman John Rutherford. He's in town for the August recess. Don't miss that. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, keep listening for music. And enjoy the tuck-in tours. I hope you get lots of calls.
Thank you.
We'll be back tomorrow.
But remember, brothers and sisters, you can still call. A great big Cadillac, like, diamonds in the back, sunroof top, digging the scene with a gangster lean, gangster
diamonds in the back, sunroof top, digging the scene with a gangster lean.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
All right.
Diamonds in the back, sunroof top, digging the scene with a gangster lean.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.